Okay, let's continue with part two of Hell is the Land of Tranquil Light. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for being here. As we left off in part one, Nichiren is conveying some support, some advice, and some condolences to a woman who's lost her husband recently. And he's explaining how the life of her husband, because he dedicated himself to the Lotus Sutra and therefore brought her along in his thinking, in their thinking, that this life is an opportunity to awaken to our extant Buddha nature, that Buddha and our Buddha-ness is actually... we're in it, and it is around us all the time. What prevents us from experiencing that wonderful bliss and profound preciousness of life itself and observing the process of life is our attachments, our egotistical view of the world, and its thingness, its physicality, and which brings about the physicality itself is our attachment to this samsaric world, this human existence. What we need to do is see, to go ahead and experience the human experience, because it's a wonderful thing, but to detach ourselves from all of the delusions that we have about permanence, about holding on to things, about all our attachments, our desires. Remember, one of the teachings that Nichiren has throughout the Lotus is that the earthly desires are enlightenment. Not that the desires themselves are enlightenment, but the desires are an opportunity to understand how they're made up, how we construe things into permanence and must-haves, is the actual mechanism that takes us away from our enlightenment. And by recognizing that, those very desires and attachments can be a source for us, an encouragement of sorts, to once again perceive their delusion, and therefore put us in a Buddha, an enlightened, a tranquil light state. Right? It's about perception. So, we closed the part one with the fact that this is a constant effort, that we must constantly devote ourselves, resolve ourselves, remind ourselves in our human selves that enlightenment is all around us and that we are that enlightenment. But it's a constant battle, right? So he continues. The two characters, the characters, Chinese kanji, calligraphy, the two characters for hell can be interpreted to mean digging a hole in the ground. Right? Once again, we talked about how hell and all of the heaven and so forth, these Western words that we use, they have their Asian equivalents. But basically, we tend to, as humans, because of our physicality, tend to see those as other places. Places other than the place we inhabit. In Buddhism, the place we inhabit is the same. It's just the way that we look at it. So here, Nichiren is going to remind us of that. He says that the two characters that represent the concept hell can be interpreted to mean digging a hole. So then he says, can anyone avoid having a hole dug for them when they die? In other words, the grave, right? This is what is called hell. Okay, it's not some other mythical place. It's an actual experience, right? The flames that burn one's bodies are the fires of the hell of incessant suffering. So when we suffer, when in life, we are attached and we have an ego and we see a self and everything relates to our physical reality, our bodies. And by extension, the place we live, the friends we know, so on and so forth. That's our body. Because of our attachment to that, we experience suffering. And those sufferings at all levels are the hell of incessant suffering. It's endless. As long as life continues, so does suffering. That's why it's incessant, right? It's always there. One's wife, children, and relatives vying for position around one's body, there it is, body, as they move toward the grave are the wardens and demons of and guards of hell. So here he's pointing out that, you know, all your relatives and the people that you know in life that compound our sense of body, they are in themselves, in their own existence, without their effort, become the mythological, if you will, the storytelling, the skillful means. They become the wardens and demon guards of hell. In other words, these are not real other things. These demons don't run around the ground all dressed in black waiting to infest you. They are the concept of attachment through relatives, children, right? Those are the closest relationships we have. And they themselves, therefore, represent the most volatile, the most powerful attachments, which are themselves the source of suffering. That's what hell is. So he's being very explicit here, right? The plaintive cries of one's family are the voices of the guards and wardens of hell. One's 2.5 foot long walking stick, remember that he talked about the walking stick, is the iron rod of torture in hell. Because it's a constant reminder of our physical reality, right? The horses and oxen that carry one's body are the horse-headed and ox-headed demons, and the grave is the great citadel of the hell of incessant suffering. Think about the ritual of burial. How ominous is that ritual about our attachment to body? Think about that. The 84,000 earthly desires are the 84,000 cauldrons in hell. So this is a very important guide he's given here on how to study. When you study these concepts, these aren't unrelated concepts to the experience of your life. They're just colorful wordings to remind you conceptually of what you're experiencing in the physical world. One's body leaves home for the mountain of death, while the river beside which one's filial children stand in grief is the river of the three crossings. It is utterly useless to look for hell anywhere else. So in her grief, he's trying to let her know that what you're experiencing is hell. It's not some other place. You're not going there. You're in it. Those who embrace the Lotus Sutra, however, can turn all of this around. Hell becomes the land of tranquil light. The burning fires of agony become the torch of the wisdom of a thus come one of the reward body. See, here again, we're going to touch on the three bodies of Buddha in the teachings. The manifest, the reward, and the Dharma. Right? The dead person becomes a thus come one of the Dharma body. Because the Dharma isn't a physical reality. The Dharma is a mental life condition reality. And the fiery inferno, the room of great pity and compassion, where a thus come one of the manifested body abides. So this is a way to look at our own lives. You and I, as human beings in samsara, are the manifested body of Buddha. When we practice our Buddha way, our Bodhisattva way, when we chant to the mandala of the Gohanzon, we are attaining the reward body. the perception of our Buddha nature while in the manifested body of Buddha, which is our human existence. And as we complete this duality of samsara with the manifested and reward body, the reward body at the end of our lives becomes the Dharma experience. Everything we've experienced throughout quote unquote time is the Dharma. Does that make sense? Yet another way to talk about the three bodies. Moreover, the walking stick, which was representative of the torture, right? The walking stick becomes the walking stick of the true aspect, because as it supports your decrepit worldly body and manifests your sufferings, hell, it also becomes that which supports this manifest body so that we can achieve the reward body, and therefore itself becomes the Dharma body, the experience of Buddhahood. Or the wonderful and difficult to understand law, Myoho Renge Kyo. The river of the three crossings becomes the ocean of the, quote, sufferings of birth and death and nirvana. This is our human existence. And the mountain of death becomes the towering peak of earthly desires, our enlightenment. So what a study guide he's giving her, right? A way to understand the teachings so she can internalize them, understand them fully. Please think of it in this way, he says. Both attaining Buddhahood in one's present form and, quote, opening the door of Buddha wisdom, end quote, refer to realizing this and to awakening to it. Now he takes from the Lotus Sutra again. Devadatta's changing the Avicii hell into the blissful land of tranquil light, and the Dragon King's daughter's attaining Buddhahood without changing her form were nothing other than this. It is because the Lotus Sutra saves those who oppose it as well as those who follow it. This is the blessing of the single character Myo, or wonderful and difficult to understand. Bodhisattva Nagarjuna stated, quote, the Lotus Sutra is like a great physician who can change poison into medicine. The great teacher Myaolo stated, how can one seek the land of eternally tranquil light anywhere apart from Buddhagaya? In other words, our existence here in the Buddha way. This Saha world does not exist anywhere outside the land of eternally tranquil light, unquote. He also said, the true aspect invariably manifests in all phenomena, and all phenomena invariably manifest the 10 factors. The 10 factors invariably manifest in the 10 worlds, and the 10 worlds invariably manifest in life and its environment. Life and its environment is samsara. It's us. We are the environment. Like I said before, our bodies, our perception of body, is externalized as mountains, hills, people, earth, sky, universe. That's all body. That's manifest Buddha. Follow? The Lotus Sutra reads, quote, the true aspect of all phenomena can only be understood and shared between Buddhas. This reality consists of the appearance, nature, right? The 10 factors we chant and recite in the second chapter, the Hoban chapter of the Lotus Sutra. And their consistency from beginning to end, right? Yose so, yose in, yose in, yose kan, yose in. The lifespan chapter states, quote, it has been immeasurable, boundless, hundreds, thousands, 10,000 millions of niyutas of kalpas since I in fact attained Buddhahood. How old is the universe? In this passage, I refers to all beings in the 10 worlds, because all beings of the 10 worlds are inherently Buddhas. They dwell in the pure land. We are all manifest Buddhas. We need the reward Buddha body by practicing the lotus so that we can achieve the Dharma Buddha body. The expedient, see, still a body. The Dharma experience of enlightenment is still a body. That's why I keep reminding you that Buddhahood isn't some other reality. It's this one. It's what this is. The expedient means chapter reads, quote, these phenomena are part of an abiding law, and the characteristics of the world are constantly abiding. Abiding what? Buddha nature, life, this process. Since it is the way of the world that birth and death are eternally unchanging characteristics of life in the three existences of past, present, and future, there is no need to grieve or to be surprised. The single word characteristic represents the eight characteristics or phrases of the Buddha's existence. Even these eight phrases do not transcend the two words birth and death. To be enlightened in this way is referred to as the attainment of Buddhahood in one's present form by the votaries of the Lotus Sutra. Wow, this Gosho is just continuing. Since your deceased husband was a votary of this sutra, he doubtless attained Buddhahood just as he was. You need not grieve so much over his passing. On the other hand, to grieve is only natural for ordinary people. However, even sages are sometimes sad. Could the lamenting of all the great enlightened disciples of Shakyamuni Buddha at his passing have been meant to show the behavior of ordinary people? You should by all means perform as much good as you possibly can for the sake of your deceased husband. The words of a wise man of old also teach that, quote, you should base your mind on the ninth consciousness, Amala, and carry out your practice in the six consciousnesses, end quote. How reasonable it is too. In this letter, I have written my long cherished teachings. Keep them deep within your heart. Respectfully, Nichiren. So, it's a very compassionate letter, but it's full of guidance that all of us could use. It is in those moments of deep emotional distress that we're most open to and therefore vulnerable to negative influences, or influences entirely, good or bad. What Nichiren is closing with is he's saying, look, we have a lot, we live in Japan, or as you and I, we live wherever we're living, wherever you are. Our cultures are part of our identification of what and who we are. That's our earthly manifest Buddha body. We have a need socially to observe certain conventions, like the burial, like the cremation, like whatever. These are honorific things we do about the body of life that are culturally expected. To not do them will bring more negativity from our surroundings, our bodies, than to not do them. But always with the idea that we're acting in our human, our six consciousnesses, knowing at all times that our Buddha reward and Dharma bodies are there. So this is important to understand, because there are the tendencies toward nihilism in some sects, right, in some belief system, and that's not Buddhism. We don't negate our humanness, our human life. We simply honor it respect it and see it for what it is, this tremendous one vehicle, right? The one vehicle of advanced Mahayana, the Lotus Sutra, to attain the reward body and the Dharma body of our Buddha nature and Buddha-ness in its entirety. So yes, do what you have to do to honor your husband, your deceased husband, but always with the understanding that he was a votary of the Lotus Sutra, and so are you. So this should be a celebration of Buddha, of your Buddha-ness, of your precious life, giving you the opportunity, being the one vehicle, to achieve the reward in the Dharma body of your Buddha-ness. That your desires are enlightenment, that your sufferings are simply the noise, if you will, of samsara, that they're not to be held on to, attached, that you can observe them, just like you can observe a fish without drowning. Do you see attached, detached? Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you tremendously. And I appreciate your practice. Comments below. Stay healthy. Keep practicing. The answers are there because you're there. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. See you in the next one. Bye-bye.